We will now open the floor, for the panel, for a panel discussion, and this will include Chris, who has agreed to stay on with us as well. So I will ask the one question that came in from the audience first. And Chris, I'm assuming this is you'd probably be in a better position to answer this, is whether contractors will be audited. Confirm that they have delivered to every county that they were allocated, B, ensured that purchases were made locally, and third part of it is whether you can to ensure that they took into account local dietary considerations, or whether these boxes were, in other words, culturally pertinent, if we can say, for populations like in Alaska, Hawaii, and including or Indian reservations as well. Any comments on that? And I will open the questions for everyone. I mean, if you have dealt with some of these populations or some of the issues listed in the questions. But Chris, let's start with you on this.
Sure. And I want to start off by saying I really, really appreciate the comments of the panelists. We devised these programs and hope they work to help us meet our goals, and sometimes they're off the mark. And I certainly appreciate the feedback, positive and negative, because it'll help us inform our future efforts. We do have a robust audit program set up to monitor our vendors. We have a program set up to review. One thing I failed to mention, the vendors are paid for what is delivered. So that once they deliver a box, they get paid for a box. So we are keeping a very close eye on invoicing. What was invoiced, we confirm that what was invoiced was delivered. We reach out to the nonprofit recipients and verify in various other ways that the invoices that are being submitted to us are accurate. We have a audit program to take a look at food safety of our contractors. Because of the pandemic, we haven't been able to get out to all of them, but we are doing desk audits, and if necessary, we are visiting operations to verify that the product that's going into the food box is domestic. The operations are meeting various food safety requirements. Keeping our contracting staff are responsible for keeping in very close contact with these vendors to monitor whether they're meeting their commitments. If there are any complaints, they go through their contracting staff, and we help resolve any complaints with a review and investigation. We rely very much on our contractors to work with local organizations, nonprofit organizations, to customize boxes within the structure of the program. So we're relying on our vendors, our contractors, to have those relationships with the nonprofit so they can customize to the extent possible the contents of the boxes.
Thank you, Chris. Any additional comments from the other panelists? Okay, we'll move on then. One of the questions has to do with barriers to getting involved. Were there any barriers that limited participation from either farmers or businesses? And how were prizes that participants received determined? And I'll expand on this as well to add another component to this question relating to what was the biggest obstacle to not being approved or awarded a contract for phase three or round three? Because it seems like none of our panelists that are participating in round three of the Food Box program. So let's start with you, Emily. Would you tell us, would you kind of elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, I was not the boots on the ground for going through the the grant or the contract applications and so forth. I do know, you know, it was really hard with all the changes throughout the program, you know, starting out, you know, like, okay, yep, the program's vague. We're getting in. We got to experiment and see what's working and what's not working. But, you know, with round three, it's like, okay, everything just shifted. Too many politics, not sourcing locally or even regionally. Like, there was just too much that wasn't consistent with our mission and what we were hoping this program would accommodate. And then, of course, we can't get the contract because we're focused on local. We're focused on providing what our farmers are producing. And we are able to still get, you know, milk and eggs and produce and so forth to still keep it nutritional and not just one-sided. But yeah, there were way too many barriers with round three, and it didn't really align with how the program started. So I really, you know, appreciate Scott's words earlier on how frustrating it kind of turned out with round three and how many changes there really were.
Andrew, Lisette, or Scott, would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, this is Scott, and I will say, you know, when the first round of BOA solicitation was put out for the basic ordering agreements back in August, and it was combination only boxes, I will give a lot of credit to the American Farm Bureau, American Farmers Union, some of the Senate ag staffers and my state senators who I was able to speak with in conveying, you know, the difficulties that food banks might have with combination boxes in terms of working with them as community partners and the difficulties we would have. And I think myself and a number of other folks from across the nation raised that same concern, and the USDA did allow then for basic ordering agreement holders to submit applications for their BOA for fruit and veg only boxes, non-combination boxes. And that was wonderful. We had a BOA, but then when the solicitations went out for the third round, they were for combination only boxes. And so we were not able to apply or participate. And that was just plain disappointing that, you know, here myself and another farmer in Kansas who received a contract, along with others, spent a lot of time talking to our representatives and our electeds and the USDA and, you know, got them to, you know, change the program just to have them, you know, keep out the smaller groups that just plain don't have the logistical capabilities of a combination box, you know, in place of larger distributors. And as I said earlier, it's just unfortunate to me to think that when we've got a food bank line a quarter mile or longer sitting outside of our food bank today, there's not anything we can do except, you know, donate food, you know, out of our pocket to them. They are not getting boxes, and there's, you know, beyond the commodities that they're shipped through the regional food bank, there's just not much for them right now. But I'll turn it back to Andrew or anybody else who maybe has a thought.
Thank you, Scott. Andrew or Lisette, anything to add?
Yes, this is Lisette, and I would love to take a moment to add some insights here. So as far as like that, some barriers that we experience at the Inland Northwest Farmers Market Association, one of the primary ones was in the last minute nature of the USDA awards and the correspondence in between the phase periods. So I think it was at one point between the phase two award of when it was wrapping up and when the extension was offered on that contract, I think we had it was 4 hours in order to respond that if we were in or not. And that same day, we also received notification that we were on the BOA holders list and that we could respond to and apply to future solicitations for the next 2 years. So that last minute nature and the 6 to 8 week intervals of the phases made it especially difficult for our organization to plan, and especially for our farmers and producers to be able to plan and plant for. Because like that, we really want to plan for the long haul. We know that the COVID situation isn't going to improve overnight. And with that, neither is the situation that our farmers are facing, as well as community members and being hungry. So our farmers like that wanting to plant for next year, and they're getting ready, and some that even started greenhouse operations so that they could accommodate the request of our community nonprofits we're serving and keeping this going throughout all of winter. And so I definitely caught us off foot with that, you know, last minute nature of the program. The other area that we had experienced some difficulties with was in the limited category of the meat section. So for the pre-cooked pork and chicken was the limitation in phases 1 and 2. And that was especially difficult for us to find anywhere from our local and regional producers. So we did have to outsource that from out of state, and it would be wonderful if this program were to take a new iteration in the future to be able to accommodate a wider variety of meats. And I know that did open up for phase 3, but also including frozen or even fresh meat and seafood and fish.
Thank you, Lisette. We are getting close to the end of our time, but I do have a final question for you all. And it has to do with the future. I mean, where do you see your business going? I mean, both whether the organization you represent, and also the farmers that participate with you in your organization. So where do you see your business going once the Food Box program has ended? And Andrew, I'd like to hear from Puget Sound perspective first, and then from the other panelists.
Romeo, thanks for that opportunity. I think in relation to the farm, any aggregated box opportunities in the future, to kind of echo maybe some other comments, a longer planning period would be really beneficial for our local producers. I know USDA was under the gun with funding and with turnaround for this program, so that wasn't an option. But if there is an iteration going forward, that's some feedback I have for the program. Our small producers could use some heads up and planning time to fully execute and benefit from that any future program, and it also would help our small producers probably be more price competitive with the big guys to be able to do that. I think it's a great opportunity to activate Americans to kind of decentralize and hopefully take on some smaller distribution chains to build up that capacity as a country and as a nation together through this program. I guess kind of to echo a disappointment in seeing the consolidation in large corporate accounts with the consideration being price in phase 3, I really do believe there could be some efficiencies and benefits kind of decentralized with small producers, small distributors getting access to a similar program in the future. From our perspective in the pandemic, we're going to keep staying nimble, adjusting our customer base and our customer needs according to what happens here in the wintertime with possible surges. But our farm is going to keep growing, and we're happy to be serving as an additional sales outlet to their existing channels, whether those are CSAs, direct relationships, or other markets they have access to.
Thank you, Andrew. Scott, Lisette, or Emily, any comments regarding the future of your businesses?
Yeah, I'll chime in. This is Scott. You know, unfortunately, all the TV ads and radio ads and just about every conversation we have these days, it's very uncertain. You know, these are uncertain times. I was looking the other day at some sales figures year over year, and last year, restaurants and school districts accounted for about 32% of our gross sales. And this year, to date, it's about 3.2%. And I don't see those restaurants coming back anytime soon. You know, as we get into these colder months, as much as I'd love to be an optimist, I don't see COVID going away. I don't see people feeling comfortable and returning to their daily expenditures outside of the grocery stores. You know, somebody mentioned earlier, grocery stores are tightening their belts at this point because there was a lot of excess spending from them to provide additional product when it was needed most to consumers earlier this year. You know, I don't see our school districts coming back to full, you know, in-person classes in our region anytime soon. And even if they do, I don't see particularly their budgets being able to afford the local food programs they had in place. So it makes me very nervous to think about what next year looks like. We would like to think that we will be expanding, but, you know, I know that if I think about all of my Amish growers that we work with, if I think about the fruit farms, you know, those 138 count apples, those Chopper Bell peppers, you know, that many items that are destined for food service institutions and you know, food service institutions and school districts, there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen with those products. And so, you know, I hope that we can participate, whether it be as a BOA or a subcontractor in the future, but we will have to see what happens from there. But I know that, you know, at least for now, 2020, we're going to keep growing food. We're going to keep, you know, whether that be vegetables or grains or commodities, and we're going to push through and keep supporting the local growers we work with and keep supporting our local community.
Thank you, Scott. That is great. And you're right about the uncertainty of the times we live in. And appreciate the plug there for our program. Lisette and Emily, any comments regarding the future of your business? And what do you see happening from here on out?
Yeah, this is Emily. In regards to Link Food, so the cooperative, you know, I think we used to be moving a lot of product to institutions right now, like with schools and so forth. We would be moving tons of onions and potatoes and carrots, and all of those crops don't have anywhere to go anymore. So it's just like Scott was saying, like the big quantity of these perishables, there's a big limbo. So I think for us, we are really focusing on direct to consumer because they have the buying power right now. And with COVID and, you know, the processing facilities shutting down and the shortages, like food, local food, and the awareness of where food comes from has become so much more of a conversation. And, you know, people are starting to care about it a lot more and are willing to pay more for that food security and local food. So for us, I think it's our own CSA boxes and that box subscription and really getting consistency out to the public, and whatever is coming into our distribution, we can get it into the hands of the public. And also large quantity storage crops. When COVID really initially hit, we went to just an online marketplace of 50-pound bags of, you know, flour and, you know, all of the different things that we could service at that point. And now with the storage crops coming, I think that we will be able to move a lot just to direct to consumer in the larger quantities with that communication of storage crops and get set for the winter. But, you know, honestly, that's kind of where it has to go right now because there is so much instability with those larger accounts with institutions and restaurants that it's really the direct to consumer and how can we meet those people where they are and get these perishables into their hands as quickly as possible.
Great. Thank you, Emily. Lisette, any comments on that?
Yes. Well, thank you, Ramiro. And yes, so as far as the Inland Northwest Farmers Market Association, we are also very responsive to what the community is facing in the moment and from both the community of our farmers and the shoppers that we're serving. So the farmers markets did see a very significant following this season, just as more people became more acquainted with the local food system and wanted to know, have full transparency on where their food was coming from and how many hands it passed through. So even though our farmers markets had to cut down on their vendor counts by about 50%, our farmers who were present had the best sales, record-breaking sales of the year. So we are hoping that that trend will continue into next year and that the Department of Health will allow us to invite more of our artisanal food vendors back and crafters back slowly as things progress. But in regard to the Farmers to Families Food Box program, that is definitely something we are dedicated to, and we want to find a way to keep it going and in partnership with Link Foods. And we're very grateful that the Spokane County Commissioners and Washington State Department of Ag have found us some funding to get through the rest of the year, especially as we're looking towards the holiday season. We want plates and tummies to be full during the holidays. But in looking ahead, we're, you know, exploring the possibility of having a two-pronged program where it's a buy a box, give a box program, because as we've been working through this food box program, we've been astounded by the number of people that either walk up to the farmer's market and see these boxes or just responding on social media and saying, I need to buy this. I need to buy this farmer's market box. And I'm sorry, sir, it's not available right now, but, you know, that might be an opportunity down the road, and especially in connecting with our mission to food security, if we could have a box that could qualify for EBT and SNAP benefits as well. So people can just pull up, get their box, or have some convenient opportunities to pick up. So those are our comments. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Lisette. And I'd like, Chris, given the sort of the limitation that the combination box has placed on some of the smaller contractors or small-scale agricultural businesses that participated in the earlier rounds, is there anything that from the program that you can do at the program level to include some provisions that will sort of be more inclusive and allow smaller contractors to participate in the future if the program were to continue? What would be your opinion about that based on what feedback you've heard today?
Yeah, certainly one of the things that we try to be, have tried to be throughout this program is responsive. We have heard the concerns and the constraints that a combination box has placed on small growers and others that may want to participate. So I'll take that back to the program as we discuss what's next. Should we identify some additional funding? And if we have the flexibility to make additional changes, that'll certainly be something we take a look at.
That would certainly be great, Chris, because it seems like it, based on what we've heard from previous participants in the program, it is kind of limiting access to smaller farming operations. And we would love to see provisions made to allow them to benefit from this program.